I don't remember 4.5 weeks of my life because the right side of my brain wasn't working. It's very important for me to let people know about traumatic brain injury. The idea now is to be like an apostle or a minister, going out and telling people what this is all about. Gary Busey. Hey, listener, welcome to the 18th episode of How Are You, Really? I'm your host, Nick. And today we are, Gary Busey gave it away in the opening quotation there, we're going to be discussing traumatic brain injury, okay? The second choice out of the options provided a couple weeks ago. So yeah, let's dive right in. This is a I find this topic to be super interesting. I had some pretty close encounters with some of this stuff. I'll discuss that probably toward the end, my experience in brain injury, because I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity in college to learn a lot more about it than some of my peers. So it was a pretty cool experience. But yeah, let's get down and break down the details of what TBI is. Okay, So a traumatic brain injury, or TBI, as I just said, results from a violent blow or jolt to the head or body. An object that penetrates brain tissue, such as a bullet or a shattered piece of skull, can also cause a TBI. Mild TBI may affect your brain cells temporarily. More serious TBI can result in bruising, torn tissue, bleeding, and other physical damage to the brain. These injuries can result in long-term complications or even death. So, yeah, this stuff's no joke. Just before I go any further, majority of this information I'm about to say is from mayoclinic.org. All right, so what are some general symptoms for TBIs? So TBIs can have, like, a wide-ranging physical and psychological effects. Some signs or symptoms may appear immediately after the traumatic event, or they may appear days or even weeks later. So, kind of hard to get a good initial reading on symptoms. But so let's start with mild TBI, the symptoms and signs. So the physical symptoms of a mild TBI. So loss of consciousness for a few seconds or minutes. No loss of consciousness, but a state of being dizzy, confused, or disoriented, headache, nausea or vomiting, fatigue or drowsiness, problems with speech, difficulty sleeping excessively, dizziness, or a loss of balance. So the sensory symptoms for mild TBI, sensory problems such as blurred vision, ringing in the ears, a bad taste in the mouth, or changes in the ability to smell, sensitivity to light or sound. Some cognitive or mental symptoms could be memory or concentration problems, mood changes, mood swings, or feeling depressed and anxious. Some symptoms and signs from moderate to severe TBIs can include all of the previous symptoms that I just mentioned, in addition to some of the following. The physical symptoms, loss of consciousness from several minutes to even hours, persistent headache or headache that worsens, repeated vomiting or nausea, convulsions or seizures, dilation in one or even both of your pupils, clear fluid draining from the nose or ears, inability to awaken from sleep, pretty scary, weakness or numbness in fingertips or toes, loss of coordinations. So the cognitive or mental symptoms, profound confusion, agitation, combativeness, or other unusual behavior, slurred speech, a coma, or other disorders of consciousness, children's symptoms, which these generally can only be observed since infants and young children may not be able to communicate different symptoms. So you might observe a change in eating or nursing habits, unusual or easy irritability, persistent crying and inability to be consoled, change in ability to pay attention, change in sleep habits, seizures, sad or depressed mood, drowsiness, lack of interest in favorite toys and activities. So what are some causes, some general causes or common events, I guess, that create TBIs? So these would include, so most common are falls, so fall from a bed, ladder, down the stairs, in the bath, or other falls are pretty common cause. Vehicle-related collisions, so involving cars, motorcycles, or bikes even. Oh, actually, even pedestrians can be involved in such accidents, so that's also a pretty common cause. Violence, so gunshot wounds, domestic violence, child abuse, or other assaults can be common. And this one is highly unfortunate. Shaken baby syndrome is also considered a TBI in infants. Sports injuries, so sports including soccer, boxing, football, baseball, lacrosse, skateboarding, hockey, or any other high impact or extreme sports are a very common cause. Explosive blasts and other combat injuries are a common cause of TBIs in active duty military personnel. Although the damage occurs isn't yet well understood, many researchers believe that the pressure wave passing through the brain can significantly disrupt the brain function. So the pressure waves from the explosive blasts are actually what causes the concussions or the traumatic brain injuries. Just kind of interesting. So some risk factors. The people who are most at risk for getting TBIs are children, especially newborns and four-year-olds. Young adults, especially those between 15 and 24. And then older adults, 60 and older. And then, really, across the board, males in any age group are more likely. So what are some complications, TBIs? Several complications include an altered consciousness, physical complications, intellectual complications, communication problems, behavioral changes, emotional changes, sensory problems, and degenerative brain diseases can also occur immediately or soon after TBI. So let's just get into these complications and sort of expand on them a bit. So the altered consciousness. A moderate to severe TBIs can result in prolonged or permanent changes in a person's state of consciousness, awareness, or responsiveness. So these can include a coma. An individual in a coma is unconscious, unaware of anything, and unable to respond to any sort of stimulus. This results from widespread damage to all parts of the brain. After a few days to even a few weeks, a person may emerge from a coma and enter, may emerge and break out of the coma. Or they may even slip into a vegetative state. What is a vegetative state? During the vegetative state, the person is unaware of surroundings, but he or she may be able to open his or her eyes, make sounds, respond to reflexes, or even move. It's possible that an individual may stay in the vegetative state permanently, but often individuals progress to a minimally conscious state. So, what is a minimally conscious state? It's a condition of severely altered consciousness, but with some signs of self-awareness or awareness of one's environment. It is sometimes transitional state from a coma or a vegetative condition to greater recovery. Brain death. When there is no measurable activity in the brain and the brainstem, this is called brain death. Okay, this is obviously sort of how these transition to one another. In a person who has been declared brain dead, removal of breathing devices will result in cessation of breathing and eventual heart failure. So brain death is obviously considered irreversible. So pretty scary what some of the results of a TBI can create. And that's just the beginning. So let's get into the physical complications. So one, seizures. Some individuals with TBI will develop seizures. The seizures may occur only in the early stages or even years after the injury. Recurrent seizures are called post-traumatic epilepsy. So fluid buildup in the brain, which is called hydrocephalus. So cerebrospinal fluid may build up in spaces in the brain, so the cerebral ventricles, of some who suffered TBIs, causing increased pressure and swelling in the brain. So the fluid that gets into these cerebral ventricles causing increase in pressure and swelling in the brain, which is not good. So infections, so skull fractures or penetrating wounds can tear the layers of protective tissues, the meninges, that surround the brain. This can enable bacteria to enter the brain and cause infections. An infection of the meninges, or meningitis, could spread to the rest of the nervous system if not treated. Blood vessel damage. Several small or large blood vessels in the brain may be damaged in a TBI. This damage could lead to stroke, blood clots, or even some other problems. Headaches. Frequent headaches are very, very, very common after a TBI. They may begin within a week after the injury and could persist as long as several months. Vertigo. This is also a very common experience post-TBI, and it's a condition that's characterized by prolonged dizziness. So sometimes any or several of these symptoms might linger for a few weeks to a few months following a TBI. This is currently referred to as persistent post-concussive syndrome. When a combination of these symptoms lasts for an extended period of time, this is generally... When a combination of these symptoms lasts for an extended period of time, so beyond a few months, we're into the year range now, obviously, this is generally referred to post-concussion syndrome. So previously it was persistent post-concussive symptoms, not the syndrome. So if it lasts for years, it qualifies as the syndrome, just to make that clear. TBIs at the base of the skull can cause nerve damage to the nerves that emerge directly from the brain, which is cranial nerves. So the cranial nerve damage may result in paralysis of facial muscles or losing sensations in the face, loss of or altered sense of smell, loss of or altered sense of taste, loss of vision or even double vision, swallowing problems, dizziness, constant ringing in the ears, or hearing loss completely. So some intellectual problems for moderate to severe can result in problems with many of these skills, intellectual skills, which can include cognitive skills, which are thinking skills. That's what cognitive means. So those would include memory, learning, reasoning, judgment, attention, or concentration. Any of those can be affected. Or other intellectual problem would be executive functioning problems. And so these problems would include problem solving, multitasking, organization, planning, decision making, beginning or completing tasks. So communication problems can also occur. Language and communication problems are actually very common in following TBIs. These problems can cause frustration and conflict and misunderstandings for people with a TBI, as well as the family members, friends, and care providers. Some of these communication problems may include cognitive problems like difficulty understanding speech or writing, difficulty speaking or writing, so not only understanding, but you also can't actually do it, inability to organize thoughts and ideas, trouble following and participating in conversations, social problems. These would include trouble with taking turn or topic selection in conversations, problem with changes in tone, pitch, or emphasis to express emotions, attitudes, or subtle differences in meeting, difficulty understanding nonverbal signals, trouble reading cues from the listeners in their conversations, trouble starting or stopping conversations, inability to use muscles to form words. Some behavioral changes can also occur. These can include difficulty with self-control, lack of awareness of abilities, risky behavior, difficulty in social situations, and verbal or physical outbursts. So really, a TBI can completely change a person's whole persona sometimes, which is pretty intense. This moderate to severe TBIs also include emotional changes, and these can include depression, anxiety, mood swings, irritability, lack of empathy for others, anger, and insomnia. Some sensory problems could include persistent ringing in the ear, difficulty recognizing objects, impaired hand-eye coordination, blind spots or double vision, a bitter taste or bad smell, or difficulty smelling, just like the mild TBI. Let's see here. And trouble with balance or dizziness. All right, so this mentioned this at the beginning, but degenerative brain diseases can also occur. Research suggests that repeated or severe TBIs might increase the risk of degenerative brain diseases, but this risk can't be predicted for an individual. And researchers are still investigating if, why, and how TBIs might be related to these diseases. A degenerative brain disorder can cause gradual loss of brain functions, which can include Alzheimer's disease, which primarily causes the progressive loss of memory and other thinking skills. Flashback to the episode that we discussed on that in depth, if you'd like. Parkinson's disease, which is a progressive condition that causes movement problems such as tremors, rigidity, and slow movements. Dementia progressiva, I think I butchered that, most often is associated with repetitive blows of the head and career boxing, which then causes dementia or movement problems similar to Parkinson's. All right, so TBIs can really cause some serious issues across the board for an individual, just because your brain is the most important part of your body. So let's talk about some tips to help prevent or reduce the risk of TBIs. So some common, a lot of these are pretty common sense, but you know, it still helps to reiterate it. Seat belts and airbags, obviously. Always wear a seatbelt in a motor vehicle. small child should always sit in the back seat of a car and in a safety seat or a booster seat. Alcohol or drug use. So don't drive under the influence of alcohol or drugs, including prescription medications that can impair your ability to drive. Helmets, helmets, helmets. Wear a helmet while riding a bicycle, skateboarding, motorcycle, snowmobiling, or all-terrain vehicles. Also, where appropriate, head protection when playing baseball or any contact sports, skiing, snowboarding, skating, or even riding a horse. Just wear helmets, please. So preventing falls can also be a pretty big one for older adults and children specifically, as we mentioned before, in the risk factors. They are a pretty high percentage of the people at most at risk. So install handrails in the bathrooms. That's a simple step. Put non-slip mat in the bathtub or in the shower. Remove area rugs. Install handrails on both sides of the stairs. Improve the lighting, the overall lighting in the home. Keep stairs and floor clear of clutter. Get regular vision checkups and install window guards. Okay, so hopefully just being smart with and protecting your head at all times really is sort of the name of the game here. So let's transition into, is there a relationship between head injuries, brain trauma, and mental illness? So according to an article from ScienceNordic.com, there is a significant effect from head traumas and in developing certain mental disorders. So let's explore this relationship a little bit. Danish scientists have studied the link between head traumas such as concussions or concussion and skull fracture and the subsequent risk of developing mental disorders. They found that head injuries can increase the risk of developing certain mental disorders by up to 439%. The number's absolutely insane. I am quite surprised by our findings. I had expected to see a correlation, but it is stronger than I expected, says Sonia Orlovska, MD of the Psychiatric Center Copenhagen. So this is the largest study of its kind. It is a national register study based on all the Danes born between 1977 and 2000, which ends up totaling to about 1.4 million people. Wow, and just incredible to think about how big this study is. And these people were followed all the way up to 2010. So in this period, 113,906 of them had been admitted to the hospital with a head injury, okay, of those 1.4 million. 4% of these were subsequently diagnosed with a mental disorder. The researcher looked at the following disorders: depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and so-called organic mental disorders, which are a form of decreased mental function due to medical or physical disease rather than psychiatric illness. Okay. So, by comparing the injured people's risk of developing the disorders with the rest of the study population, they found that those with head injuries were 65% more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, 59% more likely to develop a depression, 28% more likely to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and 493% were more likely to suffer from organic mental disorders. The greatest risk was in the first year, but even 15 years later, there was a significantly increased risk. 15 years later, it's incredible. So this sort of led to a chicken and the egg situation. So I'm sure you're familiar with what that is. It's the long, one of the longest arguments in history, probably. Did the chicken come before the egg, or did the egg come before the chicken? Right? Which one came first? So in this particular situation, Orlovska is particularly surprised to see that there's a significant correlation between head trauma and mental disorders, even after adjusting the results for a known confounding factor. We know, for instance, that depression leads to reduced power of concentration, and that the early phase of schizophrenia is associated with an increased susceptibility to accidents. So, which came first, the disorder or the head trauma? Most of the previous research has failed to address this, but we have tried to work around the problem, she says. The researchers examined whether people who had been admitted to the hospital with a broken toe or similar injuries also have significantly greater risk of developing a mental disorder. So it turned out that they do actually have a significantly higher risk, higher risk of developing a disorder. But here, the risk was much, much, much lower than with the head traumas. They found that, for example, a person who enters a hospital room with a broken arm has a 16% risk, 16% greater risk of being diagnosed with schizophrenia, whereas a person who suffered from head trauma, the risk increased by 65%. So, that's a 49% difference there. So, that's still hugely, hugely different. So we adjusted for this effect and found that regarding schizophrenia, depression, and the organic mental disorders, there is still a significantly increased risk of developing a mental disorder after suffering head trauma, says Orlovska. So, what could be some of the reasons for this? Like, what's the actual action that sort of creates this sort of relationship? Inflammation and deserved trans, trans, excuse me, inflammation and disturbed neurotransmitters may be the cause. So, although there is no definite explanation to the correlation between injuries and the subsequent development of mental disorders, Orlovska believes that there are several possible explanations, which include animal studies have shown that head trauma typically causes inflammation in the brain, and this increases the risk of psychological symptoms. Some head injuries can destroy an area of the brain, and this damage can lead to the development of a mental disorder that is associated with the area in question. Okay, so if you were to get a trauma in a certain section of your brain, it could alter that region and then create a mental disorder there. A more diffuse injury such as a concussion can affect the neurotransmitters that the brain also uses to communicate between various parts of the nervous system, and this can be disrupted, or this can disrupt the balance and is associated with the development of mental disorders. The head injury may have occurred in connection with a traumatic accident, and perhaps it is the psychological an emotional reaction to the trauma that triggers the mental disorder, right? The loss of bodily functions or abilities after the accident with the head trauma may also affect the psyche so that the patient develops a mental disorder. So it's just the emotional and mental trauma paired with the brain injury that then creates the mental disorder. So it's more centered around the actual event as opposed to, the damage that's been done. So what does this study findings mean for the future. Orlowska hopes that the new findings may lead to a better understanding of the causes of mental illness. Knowing about the increased risk from head traumas may help doctors to detect mental disorders at an earlier stage in their development. So, in conclusion, TBIs are incredibly debilitating and often life-altering forms of trauma. So during my tenure in college, as I was referencing earlier, I was exposed to and informed about the profound effects of TBIs from being an intern for the Brain Injury Association of Vermont. I gained knowledge through engaging in a concussion survey, and then study the results. Contacting schools across the state about their concussion policies and information. I attended a Brain Injury Association of Vermont TBI conference, and I even got to converse with sufferers of TBI, ranging from the now mentally ill. One of the guys was schizophrenic, and they were also trying to determine, you know, did the chicken come before the egg? Was he sick first, or was it post-injury? They were leaning toward it was post-injury in his case, so the TBI brought out the symptoms. And then I also, I got to meet a few people with the mentally ill TBI, and I even got to meet a former professional snowboarder who is now TBI advocate, Kevin Pierce. So brain injuries and their confounding effects have been tremendously underexposed and misunderstood over the years. Fortunately, more research and mainstream exposure, especially via the NFL and its questionable, really at best, concussion policies, or the growing patterns of CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, I think I got that, in the NFL's former players, has really pushed brain injuries to the forefront of health conversations, which is really kind of great to see. I mean, it's not the, I guess it's bittersweet because, you know, it's terrible to see all these former players suffering from this disease, but at the same time, the advocacy is really making it a bigger issue, which is good. But unfortunately, still more about TBIs is unknown rather than understood, you know, when it comes down to it. So, but the progress in the subject has definitely increased tenfold. So, you know, every day we're finding out more and more about it. And, you know, it's only going to make the world a little better once we understand this stuff. So, you know, these TBIs are so devastating, you know. We gotta protect our brains, people. So, but anyway, thanks again for listening. I think I'm gonna give got another couple options. I got three options this time for the next episode. So the options are psychopathy and sociopathy. My favorite theory of development, which is Eric Erickson's 8-stage theory of human development, or I'll do something on dreams. So, yeah, please let me know what you would like to hear out of those three. You know, I'll probably end up doing all of them anyway, but, you know, like to hear which one you guys would like to hear first. So, please reach out via pretty much any social media platform at Nick Moon, or you can email me directly at howareyoureallynickmoon@gmail.com and let me know what you think, any thoughts, you know, anything you want to talk about that way, please let me know which one you guys would like to hear first. So, yeah, thanks again for listening, and Nick out.